supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The city of Philadelphia wins a major victory in the effort to keep the sweetened beverage tax in place. Details from WHYY's Tom McDonald.
In a 4-2 ruling, the Supreme Court decided that Philadelphia's sweetened beverage tax does not violate the state law prohibiting taxing the same item twice. The regulation, better known as the Sterling Act, gives only Philadelphia the ability to tax anything that's not taxed by the state. Anthony Campisi of the Axe the Beverage Tax Coalition, a group made of retailers, soda company operators, and consumers, says because the sales tax already applies to soda, this is double taxation.
We're clearly disappointed that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled against local businesses and customers by upholding Philadelphia's wildly unpopular beverage tax. 60% of Philadelphia voters oppose this tax. The tax has cost the city nearly 1,200 jobs and raised costs for consumers.
Mayor Jim Kenney says he's relieved the challenge was denied by the high court.
This was the one that I stayed up at night and worried about. This was the one that was would have ended it if it had gone the other way. And I think a 4-2 ruling with one recusal is a pretty strong vote.
The mayor may be relieved, but Campisi says the war to end the soda tax isn't over.
We've been continuing to work with city council. There's a bill in the state legislature, and we were pursuing the legal option. So now that the legal option is gone, the elected officials in the state have an obligation to step up and do the right thing and get rid of this regressive tax.
With the court battle behind them, the Kenney administration can move on to spend the money provided by the tax. It will go to the rebuild initiative, renovating rec centers, libraries, and playgrounds. It will also be spent on adding more pre-K seats. But because the legal fight took so long, those new seats won't show up in classrooms until the fall of 2019. Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Whoa, sir,
get on the ground.
Hold up, sir.
I told you to stay. Get your asses down on the ground.
We've all seen videos of racially charged incidents that spread across social media like wildfire. But it can be hard to get a complete picture from a snippet that often starts after tensions arise. That's why four black men, all teachers in Philadelphia, talked about their experiences of being racially profiled at a panel discussion this week. Keystone Crossroads' Annette John Hall spoke with them, and they shared two of their stories with NewsWorks Tonight producer Shai Ben-Yaakov.
Okay, so we're going back in time a few weeks. It's Father's Day, and Benjamin Slater is in
his favorite place, Dorney Park.
We get to the park, we pay, we walk through the park, we're talking, we're taking pictures. We get on our first ride of the day.
He has this series of rides that he likes to go on. Apparently, he's been to Dorney Park lots of times, and he likes to go on the steel, what's it called?
It's Steel Force. It's
okay.
It's like my favorite roller coaster.
Is it?
Also, yeah.
Well, that's what he likes to do, go on the Steel Force roller coaster.
And literally, as soon as we get off the ride, armed Dorney Park Patrol approaches me with his hand on his gun, telling me that I fit a profile and description of someone that was going through purses and bags. I kind of thought that it might have been a prank at first, like the first few minutes, because it was Father's Day, and maybe like my girlfriend and my mentee were like setting me up to like give me like some present or something, like, you know, maybe get me like fake detained and all of a sudden like pop out with like, you know, this cake telling me that I'm the greatest person on earth. But
then he was escorted to the security office by this armed patrol person. And, of course, you know, he did not agree with what was happening to him. And he protested it, I'm sure. But a cop was in the security office. And when it was all said and done, he was let go. But he was also given a citation
for causing a public inconvenience and banned me from the park for 6 months.
Wait, he was banned from the park for 6 months?
Yes, he was banned from the park for 6 months. Yes.
What for?
You would have to ask Dorney Park Patrol and South Whitehall Township. I patronized Dorney Park on Father's Day, in a small group. Like I said, my girlfriend, my mentee and his girlfriend. And, you know, we were there to just enjoy Father's Day. So that's really a question for them. I really have no idea.
You know, I don't want to say what he did. He was probably defensive, of course, as I think probably plenty of people would be in that situation. He had just gotten there. And so he has since filed a lawsuit.
Okay, we're going to put Benjamin's story aside for a moment and talk about Ishmael Jimenez. And this happened really recently, right?
Yes, it did happen recently. Ishmael Jimenez is a teacher, and he is married and has four sons. The youngest one is 3 years old.
We went to see the new Jurassic World movie on opening night at the Cinemark at 40th and Walnut. My wife, my four sons, and two of their friends. During the movie, there was loud beeping noise during the film from the beginning. At first, we even thought it was part of the beginning of the film. It was kind of like a, like if your car, you know, when your seatbelt's not on, or when you need to replace the battery of a fire alarm.
Just try it. Okay, come on. Okay.
So he went to talk to the manager, who he said was pretty dismissive. And the manager said that he would check on it to give it 20 minutes, and it should be fixed.
And at that point, we're like, okay, this isn't. We need to get our money back. So we got up, we brought our three-year-old son with us and went to the front where the same person, the same manager who told me he would handle it was there. At this point, we tell him we want a refund because of the loud beeping. He gives us the refund. And then he tells us that we're not able to enter back in the theater.
Because the policy was they had to exit the premises. Well, their children were still in there. At that point, things started to escalate. And Ashley Jimenez, who is Ishmael's wife, took out her cell phone and started recording and told the onlookers, start recording this because this is some mess, I think was her quote.
She goes into the theater to get the children. And at that point, the officer on site with the security guard kind of confront me and start, you know, basically saying, this is private property. You have to leave the premises. You can't do this. You have to listen, that type of thing. And I'm going on and on like, this is your fault. I don't know what's happening. We're just going back in the theater to get our children. We were told we couldn't. And at that point, the manager comes down as 6 to 8 police officers are surrounding me. And when my wife comes out of the theater with the children, that's where that video begins.
Why does Ishmael think this was racial profiling? Is there evidence to support that?
Well, he says the manager was dismissive to him. He says that the police officer who was on the scene called him young man when it was clear that the police officer was younger than him.
And let's be clear here that we're talking about a black man talking to a white manager at the theater and a white police officer.
And a white police officer. And he also said that he and his wife were not given the benefit of the doubt that you're a parent and I'm a parent and any parent would want to go get their kids, even if they had to be escorted by management to get their kids. But management immediately went to the mindset, he thought, that they were trying to get over on them, that they were trying to get back into the movie with their refund intact. And that's not what they were trying to do at all. They were simply trying to get their kids. And it's a level of dehumanization when people can't even see you as a parent who wants to retrieve your children, but only see you as somebody who's trying to pull something, a hustle on them.
These men came and told their stories at this event in the hopes, I assume, that people will think about them and that they'll make people aware that this kind of thing does happen. Did you get a sense that these incidents have changed them at all?
Well, you know, I can't speak for them. But what I can tell you is from my own personal experience of being racially profiled. And I mean, there have been numerous times in the department store, even working as a reporter, you know, my son has been stopped. My husband has been stopped. And I can tell you that those assaults on your dignity make you hyper aware of your surroundings when you go into predominantly white spaces. You know, you try to make sure that you do everything correctly, and it kind of takes away your freedom a little bit. It also gives you, I call it a healthy skepticism about how people are going to treat you. Of course, you want to think that people will treat you with dignity, but when it doesn't happen, then you have to be prepared.
Thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Shai.
Young Pennsylvanians will travel to the nation's capital this week to take part in a march about climate change. It will coincide with other rallies Saturday organized by young people throughout the country. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk has more on what the organizers of the event in Pittsburgh hope to accomplish.
A few years ago, when Anais Peterson was in high school, she played soccer at this field in Indiana Township.
That's the goal you always want, is down there, because it's down a hill.
A mile beyond that goalpost lies a new natural gas well pad.
It's like 2 miles from two schools, a daycare, a park. It's right by this field.
Her brother plays soccer here, and her dad's the coach. She says they're now looking for another location for games. Peterson wants municipalities like this one in the Pittsburgh suburbs to beef up their zoning rules to prevent fracking in residential areas. That's in part what's driving this 20-year-old college student to spearhead the march in Pittsburgh.
Policy is the way to combat the climate crisis.
She plans to march downtown, past the offices of three elected officials. She's focused on issues like fracking and the ethane cracker plant under construction nearby. She wants climate change to be a priority in how local, state, and congressional leaders vote.
I think people feel like very empowered when they're able to say, this is like what my elected official is doing, this is what I want them to do.
Peterson is planning the march with the environmental group 350 and NextGen Pennsylvania. It's part of NextGen America, founded by the billionaire climate activist Tom Steyer.
Well, I'm super excited. I hope the
with rain. Less than 2 weeks to go till the march, Peterson meets up with NextGen's Matthew Hatfield and Becca Tasker at the group's office in Pittsburgh to finalize plans.
We have a megaphone.
Okay.
We can bring.
It's right there.
Yes.
It's very loud.
Perfect.
Hatfield and Tasker are both in their early 20s. They want people their age to vote to influence climate policy.
I believe that an event like we're having with the Climate March is expressive of a lot of the people in the younger generation actually thinking that even though we are not at the best point now, that we can still do as much as we possibly or humanly can to fight climate change.
Hatfield says getting them motivated is key.
So we just want to make sure that we are vocal and loud about making the proper changes into the future.
Then comes mobilizing young people to turn out at the polls. NextGen plans to register voters along the route of the march. Tasker says this wasn't always an easy sell.
People hated talking about politics before 2016. It was very taboo. It was like not great. I was in college at the time, but even people my age did not want to engage.
Then Donald Trump was elected president. She says young people who think like her are waking up.
Very, very rarely do we have anyone say, oh, I don't vote. I don't care about politics.
Peterson cared long before she could vote. As a teenager, she testified in front of local governing boards on environmental issues. Now she's part of a group of University of Pittsburgh students urging the school to divest its endowment from fossil fuels. So it's no surprise that climate change affects the way she votes. She's trying to make sure it's a priority for others. Here's what she did this spring.
Before the election, I went through like all the candidates in the primary and made this giant like 15-page spreadsheet about how they felt on all the issues.
She sent it to her friends and posted it to Snapchat and Facebook pages geared toward Pitt students. Peterson wants those people to show up for the march. They'll finish at a downtown plaza where environmental groups will be waiting to talk to participants.
The young people have so much energy, so being able to connect those two and like really making this powerhouse is something I really want to be able to do here.
And there will be a food truck, music, and maybe even a dance party to keep that energy level high. Amy Sisk, State Impact Pennsylvania.
Incumbent New Jersey U.S. Senator Democrat Bob Menendez faces competition in November for Republican rival Bob Hugin and Libertarian candidate Murray Sabrin. The latter joins me now on Newsworks Tonight. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, anytime. It's been a hectic summer running a campaign, I'll tell you that.
How would you represent the Libertarian Party to voters you're trying to attract to place their ballot with you?
Well, I think the libertarian philosophy, which is the non-aggression principle, is the foundation of American society and culture and political system. And the Constitution clearly states that the government has a very limited role in our society, the federal government. It's there in Article 1, Section 8. Clearly, the Democrats and Republicans have deviated from their oath to uphold the Constitution. That's why we have a $4 trillion budget with a $1 trillion deficit, with a $21 trillion national debt.
I dare say, though, that every candidate for representative office pledges to uphold the Constitution. More specifically, you're promising to end what you term the welfare warfare state. Explain.
Well, one of my proposals is what's called the universal tax credit, where people will get 100% tax credit for every dollar they donate to a nonprofit that's going to help people at the local level, like food banks, training services, just name it, Habitat for Humanity. So if we start instituting that program, we could phase out all these big government programs. I think the best way to handle issues is at the local level with institutions, organizations. We have a huge social service sector. The question is, what's the best way to deliver those services? And from my reading of history and understanding management, the nonprofit sector is the most effective, is the most efficient way of dealing with these issues, and not the federal government.
What is the role of federal government?
Well, this is the problem. The government is trying to do too much. The Republicans and Democrats, they think the job of government is to make people virtuous through various laws and regulations. Libertarians believe virtue comes from the inner soul, the inner belief that people have, and that comes through culture, through family, through cultural institutions, religious institutions, and so on and so forth. We don't believe in top-down economics, that if the government spends tons of money from Washington, and that trickles down to the rest of us, we're going to have a better society. That's not true.
Interestingly, there's a quote from Sigmund Freud on your webpage. Most people do not really want freedom because freedom involves responsibility. And most people are frightened of responsibility. Well, if you agree with that sentiment, then that kind of goes against your contention that people can best manage these issues rather than government.
Well, this, I think, is a crucial point that you bring up, Dave. We have to have a cultural shift in America because the culture has shifted since the Great Depression. Prior to the Great Depression, mutual aid societies were the way that people dealt with issues at the local level. No one looked to the federal government for a solution except a few big government types in the 19th and 20th century. So there was a shift because of the Great Depression, and that shift in sentiment and culture has given us what we have today, where both Republicans and Democrats have bought into the welfare state mentality. That's one of the reasons I want to go to the United States Senate.
The Republican agenda more closely aligns with libertarian values than the Democratic agenda. And to the extent that that may be true, are you then advantaging the incumbent Bob Menendez?
Oh, not at all. Bob Menendez is one of the biggest pro-war members of Congress. We're going to earn our votes across the political spectrum. Lisa McCormick, who ran against Menendez in the primary, she got nearly 40% of the vote by spending just a few thousand dollars. And she issued a press release saying, wouldn't it be great to have somebody of Murray Sabrin's integrity in the United States Senate? That's about as close to endorsement as you get from a Democrat, who, by the way, is 180 degrees opposite me on every economic issue.
Do you worry that the system so advantages Republicans and Democrats that there is little to no chance you could prevail in November?
Well, when I went into this race, I said the goal is to be competitive. And that means raising enough funds so the print media will recognize the strength of this campaign. Having said that, we're constantly raising money. We want to step up our efforts over the next 6 to 8 weeks. So we will have a huge war chest in September, October. But let me make the point, Dave. In 1936, Norman Thomas, who ran for president 6 times on the Socialist Party platform, was asked why he's not running for president. And he said, FDR has adopted all my platform items. So there's no reason for me to run anymore. That's one of the things that third parties do, is they push the agenda that the other parties accept.
Murray Sabrin, thanks for taking the time to explain your positions on NewsWorks tonight.
I appreciate it so much, Dave.
Murray Sabrin is the Libertarian candidate for New Jersey U.S. Senator. After Labor Day weekend, when Made in America takes over the Parkway in Philadelphia, the event will have to find a new location. After 6 years, the city of Philadelphia has determined that the major multi-stage concert event organized by the rapper Jay-Z is no longer suitable for the Parkway. WHYY's Peter Krimmern reports that Jay-Z is not happy about it.
In a scathing opinion piece on Philly.com, Jay-Z wrote that he is disappointed the mayor would evict him from the heart of Philadelphia suddenly and without discussion. He claims the event brought an economic impact of $103 million since 2012, and being denied future use of the parkway is, quote, a failure on the mayor's part. Mayor Jim Kenney says this is all a misunderstanding. Philadelphia very much wants to continue hosting the Made in America concert, just not on the parkway. Back in April, that message was given to Live Nation, which was representing Jay-Z's company, Roc Nation, and Kenney says he believed Jay-Z was in the loop.
The information to Live Nation was not articulated to Roc Nation, and that's what caused this kerfuffle.
While the concert undoubtedly brings a boost to the city, it also brings problems. Residents of nearby Logan Square and Fairmount neighborhoods have learned to expect several days of blocked traffic, noise, and disruption for the week between setup and breakdown. Bruce Butler is the president of the Fairmount Civic Association.
I have mixed feelings about it. I thought it was good to bring people into the neighborhood, into the city, to see what a nice neighborhood it is. But for the 2 or 3 days when it happens, we're kind of captive in our area because we can't leave. Our parking spaces would just disappear. And I'm relieved we will get our neighborhood back.
The decision to end use of the parkway for Made in America was informed by a study commissioned by the city and the Parkway Council, which said the concert puts undue stress on the community and the parkway's infrastructure. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Vinyako, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.